Okay, so you saw it last night. The Houston Rockets took on the Milwaukee Bucks, and they fell 116-109. Another brilliant game for James Harden, who had 42 points. He was 6 of 16 from outside. Those 5 3-pointers in a row. He now has 11 straight games in a row with 5 3-pointers or more. That is an NBA record, and it's an NBA record by a lot. I learned that on the broadcast. Last night, Giannis Antetokounmpo played pretty well, as did the Milwaukee Bucks, who I think are the best team in the Eastern Conference based off the way they played last night under Coach Mike Budenholzer.
They're athletic, they're tough, they're long, so they're going to give Harden problems. And he's clearly, Harden is playing as sort of like a, in like a Kobe-esque way, and I don't say that in a negative way. Yeah. It's what he has to do, given the fact that there's no Chris Paul and there's no Eric Gordon. So I think this Rockets team, the way that they're constructed right this second, they're going to have some nights like last night where they basically run out of guys. As Paul mentioned to start the show, that's why games like this are why eventually they obviously need Chris Paul back.
Somebody the other day pointed this out, and I genuinely can't remember who it is. I would point them out if it was, but they were talking about how Harden's not taking as many shots in the paint as he typically does. It's a whole lot of threes, obviously, but he's not balancing it between his drives. And I wouldn't read anything more into that other than that, like, yeah, for everything you just said, Mike, he's putting the whole team on his shoulders in a lot of respects. I don't want him worn down. Like, come
Nor
playoff
do I.
time. Now, in playoffs at times where he's shied away from driving because he's not getting fouls, I want that. But I think right now it's simply like, all right, what's the best way to score a bunch of points without taxing myself overly? And that's all it is. And if your perimeter shots work, and take the perimeter shots.
This was a game where, too, the Rockets did fall down by a pretty significant margin going into the fourth quarter, so you needed to have Harden out there to come back into it. He played 41 minutes. I would like to see less games where he's playing 41 minutes. Also, the Bucks really owned the paint in this one, and for those who think that there are limitations with Clint Capella, this would be one of the games that you point to in terms of his ability to just clog things up. It's really tough to stop Giannis Antetokounmpo from basically just lasering through the lane on you because he's so big. He's gained like 50 pounds in like the last 2-3 years or so.
Oh,
he's a huge guy.
Interesting.
But he's got that like Dwight Howard sort of body.
I smell a little Mark McGuire incoming in here. I hear what you're saying, Paul. I hear what you're saying. You gave me a wink as you said he's gained 50 pounds in the last 2 years.
I did not give a wink. The great freak is a great freak who happens to make corny jokes.
The rebounding. Like, come on, can we box out a little? Can we get a little scrappy there? Like, can we try to have our ego affected? Yeah. But what am I going to do? Freak out over this?
Yeah, it's not the end of the world.
I'll freak over charge calls. That's what I'm going to freak out over here in a spell.
You can't win every single game against teams that are above 500, and the Rockets have done very well against teams that are above 500 this season. I think they have the best record in the NBA based off of another graphic that I saw last night on the broadcast on AT&T Sports Southwest. Look at me paying attention to the broadcast, but not actually referencing the actual statistics.
Not necessarily declaring anything.
I was just like, oh, hey, look at that. Cool, neat, splendid.
Did you hear about that graphic I saw on the broadcast last night? What was it? I don't know. It's just like
I was
colors
high, bro.
And stuff. It was like totally better than those Monday Night Football weird cartoons.
Yeah, man. It really got me, that graphic. The University of Houston finally lost the first time this season, the first time since the NCAA tournament last season. Corey Davis Jr. had scored the game-tying basket as time expired, but a charge was called that meant that the number 15 Cougars fall for the first time this year to Temple.
So I hate to say it, I thought it was a charge. I mean, I watched the play a bunch of times, and the guy was able to get there early.
Yeah, and as a few of our listeners, look, I'll be honest with you, I was at the award show last night.
Bear Bryant.
I had a few drinks. I was at the Bear Bryant award show last night, so I didn't get to watch this game in its entirety. I saw the charge call, and I was like, oh, look, I thought it was a charge. But as several listeners, including Ocho, our resident basketball fan listener expert, he said that the refs had it in for Sampson. He said the refs had it in for Sampson the entire night. You could draw a technical for, yelling at his own player and throwing his tie down, and that there were some other sketchy calls in the night. So to end it that way was just the coup de grace.
It was a tough way to lose, obviously, because if you count it, then all of a sudden you got a free throw and you can win at the horn. So
I wore a houndstooth hat last night.
No, you didn't.
It was far too small. Yeah.
I
tried to call it a small... No, the houndstooth. The Bear Bryant
hat. Like the Bear Bryant hat?
Yeah.
Okay.
You tried it on?
I put it out on Twitter and said that it was a small hat, and then a bunch of people accurately pointed out that, like, Seth, That's a normal size hat. You have an incredibly large head. Yeah.
Did you look like Jason Whitlock for a moment?
Yeah, I did.
This is funny.
For those who don't
know, it's kind of similar. Yeah.
Jason. It's not that small. Jason Whitlock is a guy who works at Fox Sports, and he always wears really small looking hats, and it looks extremely comical. Not quite to the degree that Merrill Hodge's short ties look comical, but there you go.
I like the houndstooth. If I had one that fit me, I think I might take to wearing one.
Houndstooth is a nice pattern. I like houndstooth as well. Three NFL coaches hired yesterday. Vic Fangio is going to be the next head coach of the Denver Broncos. Adam Gase is going to be the next Jets head coach. And Freddie Kitchens will be the Browns head coach. Greg Williams, bye-bye.
I'm not thrilled with the Adam Gase hire, but I guess I'll give him a chance. Apparently he FaceTimed with Sam Darnold a few days ago, and Darnold was, quote, thrilled with the hire. So Darnold's the most important guy they have. So I guess, I mean, I've got to give him a chance. The weird thing about Gase is that he has some issues with the Miami media, which is going to be way softer than the New York media.
What were his issues, though?
I don't know. He was just weird with the media. He would be, like, weirdly combative.
Oh, okay. Well, is that, like, was he genuinely weirdly combative, or was the media like, he's not kowtowing to us, he's not nice to us?
It's Miami.
He's weird with the media.
It's Miami.
I don't know.
New York's going to be harder.
Like, of course it's going to be. People said the same thing about Coughlin, because Coughlin used to get into it with the Jacksonville media. Let me tell you something about these Florida papers at times. Like, they think a little much of themselves, and they're like, we're gonna make a name for ourselves by taking on the head football coach. And then you get up to New York, and it becomes white noise. In New York, there's so much scrutiny and criticism all the time that you just stop hearing it. Coughlin was fine in the New York media. Coughlin had a tougher, more combative relationship with Pete Prisco when he was with the Jacksonville Times Union than he had with anybody at the Post or the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or Barron's Business Daily or anything else.
One thing to wrap everything up, Kyler Murray, the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback, is expected to declare for the NFL draft. That per Sports Illustrated.
Hot damn, that's interesting.
Well, so
wasn't there somebody that has some things to say about Kyler Murray?
Well, Cliff Kingsbury said he would take him number one overall.
That's right. That's what he said before he was an NFL head coach. Yeah. Now he's an NFL head coach. Will Kyler Murray, all 5'3" of him, he's the Altuve of potential NFL quarterback. He's not 5'3", everybody. I'm being sarcastic.
5'10", though, and it is a short 5'10".
It is not 5'10".
That's what he's listed as.
Combine, this will be one of the most watched combine measurings ever. He's not 5'10".
So the story here is that Kyler Murray basically wants to see where he's drafted and make a decision.
Oh, okay.
That's the deal with this story.
He's going to Elway it.
He's expected basically to be a first-round pick.
Except Elway always in his heart of heart wanted to play football. He just kind of...
He was a football player.
He stuck around. He played baseball for 1 year just until he could get drafted by the guys he wanted.
Would you want to be playing through the minor leagues of the Oakland A's, who are a poor-ass team that can't even afford to have his... Well, yes, but the A's in particular, who can't even afford to fix their own god-awful stadium, who don't spend money on anything. How would you enjoy playing in the minor leagues for an organization of poors?
I just think it's more like... Not that I've ever been in these positions, but when you're a quarterback, I mean, you're a quarterback. You are by definition a leader, and you're a quarterback, obviously, of a football team, so where you have so much say in whether you win or lose to, you are a baseball player. You're a cog in a machine. It's all about your performance. Yeah. It seems like a totally different life of an athlete from a mental standpoint.
Terrible. Let's see, Oakland. Let's see. Start off with the Vermont Lake Monsters. Nothing like Vermont.
That's not bad in the
Vermont
summer.
Vermont in spring. Oh,
that's
that'd
awesome.
Be beautiful. And then
all your games are snowed out.
He would move on to the Midland Rockhounds. So he spent some time in Midland, Odessa. Like oil prices are okay. Things are a little
maybe
dicey,
there in the fall. You can watch a little good high school football.
And then he'd be on up to the Las Vegas Aviators.
That's not bad.
By the time he hits Triple A, he's kicking it in Las Vegas. I would not want my Triple A affiliate to be in Las Vegas.
Nor would I.
send these young men off to learn some baseball skills and also maybe meet a stripper.
I suppose theoretically they're not going to be making enough money at the Triple A level to really enjoy themselves.
That's
in
you're even more worried.
They're going to get their legs broken by some random mob boss.
No, yeah, or just like, yeah, nobody, I guess, compromises themselves more than people who want to live the Vegas lifestyle but don't have the money to do it. That's where you start the moral bargaining.
See, the thing is, most minor league baseball players, players have no money because that's what we do as a country. But Kyler Murray, in contrast to those guys, will have some money.
He'll have money.
He has the bonus.
You got to ask Lance about that. In a delicate, you never want to get too deep into somebody's wallet. But I'm always intrigued by the guys who got the big signing bonus, and they're down there with guys that are making like $23,000 a year.
If that.
I gotta imagine there's some pressure there. I would feel really obligated. I feel obligated, especially everybody knows I just got like a $3 million signing bonus.
It's a weird spot.
And like, oh, you can't afford a Big Mac? I'd be buying a lot of dinners for people.
Time now for Move Seth's Needle on a Thursday.
So I was at the Bear Bryant Awards last night, and it was very, very touching moments there at times. For one, the young man who was actually the grandson of Frank Beamer's college roommate, who had this congenital heart defect, and so they played a video with his his mother up there on the screen talking about when they discovered that their son had this congenital heart defect. It was very, very little bit, had to hold back the tears a little bit, especially because we were there with my new boss, Armin.
Yeah.
Armin Williams, our new program director. I was like, I don't want to see this. I don't want this man to see me cry right in front of him. He's only known me 48 hours and now he's my boss. So I didn't, I acted like it didn't affect me at all. But inside, I was like, oh, gosh, this is rough. You find out your child is this heart disease that 94% of people die with.
Wow.
One of the reasons I bring up Frank Beamer, though, is that Frank Beamer was there. And he gave a nice speech. He was accepting a Lifetime Achievement Award. And he seems like a lovable dude.
Oh, yeah.
He seems just like a grandfather you'd love to have. He'd just be telling funny stories, self-deprecating stories and everything. And it relates to the conversation we had yesterday about what would you rather do at this point? Would you rather take an NFL job? Let's say take an NFL job for $7.5 million a year, or take a college job making $5 million a year, where you, like Frank Beamer, might have the opportunity to spend 29 years, have a statue erected in front of the stadium, and basically be a beloved figure on campus through your dying days. This is the thing you can't forget about college football coaching, and especially college campuses these days, where a lot of these places, they're built like luxury resorts with these weight rooms and everything. Mm-hmm. Frank Beamer gets to walk around the Virginia Tech campus for the rest of his life with people just coming up to him. He'll be like, Coach Beamer, oh, I love you. You're the best with what you did with this and that
Beamer
and all
ball.
These other things. Yeah, Beamer ball, this. I can't remember. I lost my virginity the day after you beat whoever. Like all this stuff. So he gets to do that for the rest of his life. I'm taking the college. If I'm Lincoln Riley making $5 million a year, I'm rolling through that as long as I can. And NFL be damned. The only downside, if I'm making it a pure financial decision, is at some point does the structure change in football where you're not getting away with paying your actual talent minimum wage. Where all of a sudden then you got to change the calculus and football coaches aren't making as much.
I guess the only thing I would caution is that, these schools have become much more ruthless at firing coaches. And so the whole Frank Beamer stay around for 30 years in one college campus might be tougher to cobble together. That'll be my one thing.
Another good thing that happened last night, I met one of our listeners, Dave Howell, who works for Silver Eagle Distributors.
Okay.
That people like. So I do a lot of work with Bud Light, full disclosure. But I always like these guys when I tour the distributing plant and everything. So I'm kind of like, I met him because I was waiting in the valet line and we're all leaving kind of early because we're people that have to get up early. And I just made some stupid little comment about like, I got to be on the air at 6 a.m. And then he just totally whipped it out and was like, yeah, I started at 4:30. And I was like, damn it.
He starts at 4:30.
He starts at 4:30. He wakes up at 3 a.m., gets a workout in, and then goes and then starts his work, and then starts work at 4:30.
Well, I'm a failure.
Yeah.
Compared to this guy.
This guy was out enjoying himself. I have a hard time. That's the only time I regret doing morning radio is when I'm at events like last night where I was having a good time. Like Frank Beamer's speech, was awesome. And then I'm kind of like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
I'm getting sleepy already. I got a radio show to do in the morning. I'm gonna leave. I'm gonna miss out on Dabo Swinney who won the award 3 out of the last 4 years. And let me ask you this. This, I don't know. There's part of me that wants to get upset about this, but what am I going to do? Nick Saban.
Did he show up?
Nick Saban. Now, mind you, this is the Bear Bryant Awards.
Yes.
Bear Bryant. A little bit of a connection to Alabama. Does he not?
Yes.
Is he not a revered figure at Alabama? Bear Bryant. The award is the Bear Bryant Awards. Bear Bryant's entire family is there. Like his great grandchild is apparently about to go play football at Alabama. No, Nick Saban is not there.
He's not there.
Ah, I don't look. I know he's a busy man. I know he's got a lot of obligations. But I especially, it seems like when you're in that conversation of, yeah, who's better, Nick Saban or Bear Bryant, I feel like it's a slap in the face.
Did Sean,
he's not, is it 2 years in a row he hasn't been there now?
I don't know. Did Sean tweet that usually when he shows up, he'll be very quick in and out, won't do any interviews, yeah, and he'll just like do like what he has to do?
I get that. I understand.
But
that.
My whole thing is like, if Dabo Sweeney, like, listen, right now,
you know what?
Right now, today, Clemson, obviously, based on what we saw Monday in the last couple of years, is right there with Alabama. Whatever Dabo Sweeney does, nobody can argue to me, hey, Nick Saban just doesn't have the time
and
to do that.
You know what? Dabo Sweeney is there. For one, let's say it's possible that Nick Saban actually won the award, but if you don't show up, they go to the next guy on the list.
Yeah.
So for one, if you're genuinely trying to compete with Dabo Sweeney, maybe you're not. I don't know. Maybe you're not. Sure didn't look like it the other night. Maybe you're not actually competing with him anyway. But let's say for the sake of argument, you actually are trying to compete with Dabo Sweeney. Maybe you show up and win that award at least. Like, and maybe as Dabo Sweeney is talking to one of the recruiting hotbeds in the nation.
Good point.
Where he's just being up there, being Dabo Sweeney, smile, coming on Sports Radio 610 for 20 minutes. Like, recruits are hearing this. More importantly, parents of recruits are hearing this. Wow. I'd love for my kid to go play for Dabo Sweeney versus that grumpy old bastard.
You two just don't get it.
Yeah.
Because you guys haven't subscribed to the Patrick Bet David way of living your life. Nick Saban going to an award show less than a week after losing the national championship game 100,000 to -16. Are you kidding me? You can't do that. You can't do that. You can't show your face in public. Nick Saban, if he's anywhere, he better be, first off, in the gym trying to be better. Or he should be out on the recruiting trail getting all the players that he can.
Clearly not an overachiever.
Right.
Real quick. This is from Dan Carlin's Hardcore History podcast, which I've told several of you about before. But this is an episode in which he's describing the Celtic Holocaust, as he calls it. This is where Caesar went to the North Countries and made a name for himself by basically slaughtering perhaps up to a third of the entire population of Gaul or the Celtic tribes, however you want to describe it. But this is how the Celtic tribes would raise an army back in the day. You couldn't really have a draft per se. So this is how the Celts would do it.
A source that says that the Celtic method for this was a variation, if you will, on the idea of last one in is a rotten egg. It's last one who arrives to the muster gets tortured to death in front of the army. Isn't that wickedly efficient and yet in a decentralized sort of tribal way? We're not going to get too specific about it. There's not going to be written records. Not going to do all that. But the last guy who shows up to the muster, yeah, we kill him by slow torture in front of the whole army. Just so you know, see you soon.
So that's what they would do.
So you don't want to be the last guy.
Listen, we're going to war. Last guy that gets here is going to get tortured slowly in front of everybody.
Well, there's no... it makes sense.
Oh, you want to burn your draft card, hippie? What the hell?
Wow.
These people, these Celts. Yes, these people. I'll be racist and talk about my own people as these Celts. Like, what the hell?
You know, sometimes you just gotta establish dominance. You gotta establish that there's a team goal, and if you're not a part of the team goal, I mean, GTFO.
We gotta start using this strategy more often. This public shaming for people that aren't showing up.
Well, last guy
I'm
in.
I'm the last guy in though. Every day, you guys want to torture me to death?
I'm gonna publicly.
I'm showing up at like 5:58, like 30 on the dot.
Yeah, but I think since you live so close that you have it like time to the second, basically.
Yeah,
you
I know
really well.
Yeah, it's not like you're dry. I know you're not pulling into the parking garage and coming up on the elevator like at that hour. Are you? Oh, you're going to be late at some point then.
I need to change that.
Yeah, you need
I need to be slightly better. I haven't been late yet somehow. I don't know. Well, actually, there's one time.
That's funny.
My only time was when I forgot that we were on remote at the Catherine Renaud tournaments back in the spring.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and I was in. And also, the equipment wasn't working, so I did the first segment from my telephone.
Ooh, fun.
I did a solo segment from my telephone.
Well, because I was in.
Hey, everybody.
Because I came in a few. I came in at like 5:52 or whatever. And so I'm sitting here. We do the first segment where I'm here and Seth is over there. And then the first commercial break, I have to drive over.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I did a.
You got over pretty quick. It was impressive.
It might have been the next day I did a solo segment on my telephone. I don't know. I'll tell you what, Paul. I saw Lamont tweeting about this the other day, and it's true. Like, and I think this is one. I'm not comparing football to the military at all, but in terms of punctuality, I get that very – dude, being late to something is, in my mind, it's one of the biggest signs of disrespect you can have for somebody.
I feel you.
So, like, I try – like, I usually – I show up, 45 minutes early to stuff. Just so you know, there's people out there that will judge you. I won't judge you harshly because I know you do – you prepare like hell for your job. But there are people that will, if you show up late to something, it's not just like, oh, there's dashing Paul showing up late. How European of him.
I'm essentially on Euro or Southern time, and I don't know how I got to this phase of being. But, I mean, shoot, I was 10 minutes late to the date last night.
Oh, that's different.
That's okay.
She's got to know that you don't need her. Yeah.
All right. Coming up at 7:18,